And there are lots of smart, innovative people around the country who are experimenting with market-based mechanisms for doing just that, for acquiring flows, for acquiring water rights, rather, for environmental flow purposes. And so one of those innovative market mechanisms called reverse auction is the subject of our discussion of this next session. And here to introduce us and orient us to that subject is my colleague, Mary Kelly, who has been a longtime partner with the Texas Living Waters Project. She is the Senior Counsel for Environmental Defense Fund's Center for Waters, Center for Rivers and Deltas, and has really focused on water law much of her career and has been fearless in tackling thorny things like binational water rights with U.S. and Mexico and other things, and helped negotiate the settlement that we reached that underlay the water legislation that was passed in 2007. So she is going to tell us all about reverse auctions right now. Thanks, Mary.
Thanks very much, Susan. It's actually a really, I had a great time preparing this paper because it's a topic about which I knew a little bit, just enough almost to say, well, I'd like this to be my, you know, graduate thesis. Not that I've done that much research on this, but I really started to dig into the literature, and I think really this is one of the most cutting-edge, exciting tools that we might put to use in the future in Texas and elsewhere in the West to help protect in-stream flows and to meet multiple needs in streams and rivers that are under stress, whether it's from drought or from changing demand patterns. So what I'm going to do today is talk a little bit about what are reverse auctions. I'm going to give a couple of examples of how they've been used in places outside Texas. And then we have a panelist, Pat, here is going to tell us a little bit about how they've actually been used in the Edwards Aquifer already in Texas. And I'm also going to touch on some other options for how they might be used in our state. So let's go to some of the basic concepts. First of all, what is a reverse auction? Well, in a normal auction, like selling a piece of art or on eBay, you have one seller and many buyers. A reverse auction is actually the reverse of that. You have one buyer and many sellers. The idea is you have someone who wants to acquire water rights, either on a temporary or a permanent basis. That could be the state. It could be a city. It could be a water rights water supplier, or it could be a water trust. And the idea is that they have a certain quantity of money and a certain goal in terms of acquiring water. And instead of just going out in a normal one-on-one transaction, like I'd like to buy your right or I'd like to buy your right, or even another way that it's been done in the past is just sort of a posted offer, like I'll buy water rights for $20 an acre foot. Instead of that, a reverse auction is, come to me, you water right holders, with your bids. And I'm going to hold this auction, and I'm going to decide whose rights I'm going to buy based on price and quantity and characteristics of those rights. Now, they haven't really been used. Reverse auctions have not been used much for water, but they have been used some. And there's a great paper out there, and I'd be happy to provide any of you with the detailed reference by Bruce Alward and some of his colleagues up in Oregon who've looked at the experiences to date with reverse auctions. And giving full credit where it's due, I've drawn a lot on Bruce's paper for this presentation. It's amazing how complicated they actually could make these auctions. So I want to step through some of the design factors and then come back to what I think is probably the simplest design. There's several factors in designing a reverse auction. First is, how many rounds of bidding are you going to have? Are you going to have one round? Are you going to have multiple rounds where people submit bids? The buyer opens them up and says, oh, none of these really qualify, or maybe I could get some better bids if I go another round. So you can have single versus multiple round. How are the bids submitted? There's various ways, but some reverse auctions are open bid. Some are actually sealed bid. So the open bids have been kind of interesting. Some of them have actually even done them on a website where you can see in approximately real time what the bids are looking like. Others are sealed bids. You mail out a packet to potentially interested bidders, and they mail it back with their bids before a deadline. Another factor in the auction design is what are you going to pay the bidders once you get them all in? And there's two different ways of thinking about that. One is a uniform price. You could pay every bidder who qualifies one price no matter what they bid. As long as their bid was under the price you're willing to pay, they'd be satisfied because they're getting more than they actually bid. Or you can do what's called discriminatory pricing, which means you pay each bidder the exact price that they included in their bid. Another set of factors is what budget does the buyer have in terms of dollars? What is the goal? How much water does the buyer want to acquire? And what is the, quote, reserve price? And by reserve price, I mean a cap on how much, let's say, per acre foot of water, or how much per acre of land with water rights is the buyer willing to pay. It's a strange nomenclature, but it's called a reserve price. And all the bids have to come in basically below that. All the bids that are going to be accepted have to be come in below that reserve price. Now, the trick is, how much does the buyer disclose before the auction begins? Does he tell the potential bidders how much his total budget is? Does he tell them how much water he wants to acquire? Does he tell them what the reserve price is? And that's a decision that needs to be made by the buyer, but what you want to do is get the healthiest competition and the lowest price possible from the bidders. So there's all kinds of course, econometric modeling that can go along with auction design about what your best approach might be. And we'll see as we go through some of these examples that different approaches have been chosen in different examples of using reverse auctions. Now, I think the overriding factor in auction design, according to much of the literature, is you want to pretty much, these are very new tools in the water rights arena, so you want to probably try to make it as simple as you can. And the reason for that is you want it to be fairly easy to administer for the buyer, but the bigger reason is you want to attract as much participation from potential bidders as possible. And what's the reason for that, of course, is healthy competition among the bidders. The more bidders you have, the better the competition is going to be, and the lower price per unit you're probably going to have to pay as the buyer. So that seems to be what most entities that have done these reverse auctions have chosen to do, is make it simple and easy to understand for the bidders. As this tool takes hold, I think they can be more complicated and the buyers can get more cost-efficient processes both for themselves to administer and get water at a lower price. In addition to the auction design, there's several considerations about where you might actually use a reverse auction and what it would look like. Now, in the literature, you'll see a lot of talk about, well, you know, it could potentially be used to move water from this basin to that basin or across the state from part of the state that has water to the part of the state that doesn't. I frankly think that really, and I think you'll see this in the examples, the more successful ones are actually done at a more local or regional scale, where you don't really get into all the issues of transbasin diversion or a community losing its water. You want to use these reverse auctions at a scale that is manageable and doesn't push too many buttons either in the water right holder community or in what we call sort of the third-party impact sense, that a rural community is going to be dried up by people outside their community buying the water. So I think these tools are best used probably at a local or a regional scale. The second thing you need to consider is, what's your purpose? Why do you want water rights? Susan mentioned in the introduction that we are going to run into a situation in many parts of Texas where we pretty much appropriated all the available surface water, at least on paper. And so to protect environmental flows, we need to find a way to work with existing rights holders in voluntary market transactions to leave some of that water in the stream. But there may be instances where a city needs a dry year option. And so they want to have a reverse auction for dry years where irrigators forbear irrigation and more water is in the stream or in the aquifer for the cities to be able to access. And I think Pat will talk to us a little bit about that in the context of the Edwards. So you need to look at what the purpose for the auction is in designing it. And finally, what kind of rights are going to be offered to you by the bidders? What kind of restrictions do they have on them? And that I think Colette and Pat, and we can all talk about this, is probably the most complicated part of reverse auctions. Forbearance on a single-year transaction is probably the easiest way to do it. There's probably less regulatory impediment to doing forbearance on a single-year or dry-year option. Once you start to talk about changing the place and purpose of use of the water, that's much more complicated because it requires administrative action by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. And a third level of complication is permanent transfers, at least for surface water, because that's a much more difficult process at TCEQ. So I think probably in terms of applying these and developing the tool, it's going to be those temporary forbearance situations that provide the most promise. So let's go through a couple of examples. First, here in the Flint River in Georgia, that's the dark blue line right here. It's part of the Apalachicola Chattahoochee Flint River system, which many of you may remember a couple years ago, helps provide Atlanta's water supply. Reservoirs were dry. But even before the 2006-2007 drought, in the early 2000s, there was a big drought in this basin. I mean, we all think about the Southeast as just water rich, right? Well, lots of competition, lots of irrigation in this Flint River basin. And so the legislature decided they needed to do something to help reduce irrigation demand and make more water available for municipal uses and potentially even for environmental uses. And I'll just mention that the ACF system comes out here in Apalachicola Bay, which is one of the most productive bays along the Gulf Coast, just a beautiful area. And it depends, like many of our Texas bays do, on good freshwater inputs to stay healthy. So the legislature said, we're going to try out some kind of auction process. They actually put this in legislation. Now, I will say that they added their own incentive for participation on the part of the farmers by saying, we're going to try this auction. It's voluntary if you participate, but if we're not able to acquire enough water through this auction process, we as the state have authority to order involuntary suspension of irrigation. So that really helps boost your participation in the auction. So the Georgia agencies actually did quite a bit of modeling and econometric analysis in designing their auctions. And the first time they did it, they actually used a multi-round procedure. They had multiple rounds of bidding. The bids were to come in on a per-acre price at which the farmer was willing to suspend all irrigation covered by the water rights permit for that piece of land. And that's really important because it relates to enforceability, post-auction enforceability. It's much easier to check that your payment has gone to the farmer and the farmer has actually suspended irrigation if you're doing that on a whole water right basis versus partial. Just ease of administration. They use discriminatory pricing. Remember, that's where you pay each farmer whatever it is that they bid. The bidders actually knew what the state's total budget was for the auction. So they had some information going into it. The farmers knew there was this pot of money over here in the state agency for the auction. However, the farmers did not know how much water the state wanted to acquire. So they kept a little bit of information back for themselves. So the first time around, they actually were able to buy 33,600 acres were withdrawn from irrigation. These were temporary. These were one-year basis. 33,000 acres at an average cost of about $135 per acre. And I'm sorry, I don't have how many acre foot of water was attached to each acre, but it was probably in the range of 2 or 3 acre feet per acre. So that, they felt that that was a reasonable success. But when they did it again in 2002, they actually decided to change some procedures. They knew that from this first round they had done in the previous year, the bidders had more information. They were going to be more sophisticated bidders because they'd all seen it play out the first year. But they also seemed to think that their first auction design was a little complex. So they went to a single round sealed bid with a maximum price, with a reserve price that they set. The bids actually all came in below that reserve price, and they got good participation. One thing I'm interested in, and I don't know if anybody in here knows it, is whether they followed up on using that procedure in later years. And I didn't get a chance to check into that, but it does seem to be one of the best examples out there of making forbearance work with a reverse auction tool. Let's look at the second example, and that is in the Deschutes River in eastern Oregon. There's a group there called the Deschutes, it used to be called the Deschutes Resources Conservancy, and now it's the Deschutes River Conservancy. Actually, Environmental Defense Fund helped start this organization many years ago. It was composed of, it had a board of farmers and tribal leaders. There's a lot of tribes in this area. And it was actually one of the first private water trusts in the country. Very exciting experiment. And the Deschutes is funded not only through foundations, but it's also part of the Columbia Basin's Water Transaction Program. So they actually have federal money that comes through the Bonneville Power Administration. It's kind of mitigation money for Bonneville Power. And they actually have quite a bit of resources to work with. So they've had an ongoing program, and you know, it takes a while for an organization like this to build up trust with farmers and their neighbors, but they've had an ongoing program where they were using posted offers. They were using a fixed price per acre, fixed price per acre foot of water. And it was actually quite successful in a number of the basins, except the, I think it's called the, Ochoco Irrigation District, which is here in this Crooked River area. And in that place, in that basin, they only got one bid. So because they had some federal money to work with and some leeway, they decided let's try some different approaches in this basin. And so the reverse auction approach is what they chose to go with. And they did two rounds, one in 2003 and one in 2004. They decided to use a single round sealed bid discriminatory pricing auction with a reserve price. So remember all those terms from the first couple of slides. And the reason they chose the single round is they needed to do it quickly. And why is that? Because farmers need to make planting decisions. If their bid is not accepted, they need to have had this process go through in a fast enough time that they can still go out and plant if their bid was not accepted. This is particularly important in areas where farmers don't have a dry land irrigation option. If to grow crops, they need to irrigate, then you need a quick process, a quick and efficient process. Now, while they set a reserve price, and I'll talk in a minute about how they actually picked that reserve price, they didn't disclose what that reserve price was to the bidders. They kept that piece of information for themselves, that maximum amount they were willing to pay per acre. They kept that to themselves, except that to build trust in the process. Before they opened any of the bids from the farmers, they actually gave that reserve price to the manager of the irrigation district. So that was kind of a check on them that they weren't gaming the process. So the irrigation district manager had that reserve price, was able to see it, before the Conservancy even opened up any of the bids. And I think that it's very important when you're trying out these new tools and trying to build trust. So the Deschutes Conservancy had a $50,000 budget, and they wanted to acquire 2,000 acre-feet of water. Their approach was to accept bids starting at the lowest price per acre to the highest price per acre below the reserve price until their budget ran out. So to set their reserve price, the price above which they would not accept a bid, they They did some research on in-stream flow acquisitions in the neighboring basin. And the Deschutes Conservancy had a real advantage here because they'd had this leasing program for in-stream flow going on for several years. So they actually had a database of information to work with about what farmers kind of might be worth willing to lease their water for on an annual basis. Excuse me. They also did an analysis of the Ochoco Irrigation District itself. What were farmers planning? What were their unit costs? How much money were they making? What were they likely to see as a benefit to them in terms of leasing their water rights? So they did a pretty good analysis before they set their reserve price. They set their reserve price at $75 an acre, and the water duty was 3 acre feet per acre. Let me go to some of the results of these. I'm sorry, these are small numbers and it's super dark up here. And I'm really old. I used to be able to do this without glasses or anything. So in 2003, the first time they did it, they got 8 bids, a total of 617 acres. And the bid prices ranged from about $30 to about $110 per acre. And they averaged $80 per acre. So that's not so great, right? Their average came in actually above their reserve price. But they ended up being able to accept 3 of the 8. They got about 600 acre feet of water, of wet water. Remember, their target was 2,000 acre feet, so they didn't quite hit their target. But they got wet water, and by wet water, I mean water that had actually been used for irrigation would be left in stream. And their average cost was about $18 an acre foot, or $53 an acre. So the cost of the bids they actually accepted was well below their reserve price. They did another round in 2004. Now remember, the farmers now have a lot more information in 2004 to structure their bids because they've seen it happen in 2003. They know whose bids were accepted. They probably figured out what the reserve price was. Well, the district was smart enough, actually, not to have the same reserve price. But surprisingly, they actually had a higher reserve price. They set it at $90 an acre. And the reason they did that, of course, is they had fallen short of their acquisition goal the first time around. So they set a reserve price of $90 an acre. They got 9 bids. They were able to accept them all. And their average price was about $60 an acre compared to $53 an acre in the first round. So it wasn't that much more expensive than the first round, and they got a lot more water, and they were actually able to accept all the bids, which can help obviously create goodwill with the farmers that participated in that process. So let me just conclude by talking very briefly about how we might use this in Texas. Obviously, it's going to have to be a pilot and some demonstrations. This is not something we're going to go unleash all across the state. Pat's going to tell us about how it was used in the Edwards on groundwater, and I think actually from a legal standpoint, it may be easier to use reverse auctions for groundwater once groundwater rights are better defined than they are right now. The Edwards has the advantage of fairly clearly defined rights because of its legislation. But to make any kind of market tool work correctly, you need a defined legal right. And once we start to get that in other districts, I think this will become a tool where, for example, a developer that wants to build a new subdivision in a groundwater district where theoretically there's no more water available might be able to do a reverse auction to acquire groundwater rights from local farmers and ranchers to supply its development. Now, obviously, a lot of questions that we can discuss about that, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But it could be an interesting tool in areas that are water short. And the reason to have that tool, I'll just say from a philosophical standpoint, is if you don't give developers some kind of tool like this, the pressure is either to just take on the groundwater district, dismantle it, litigate the hell out of it, bring in your own experts and say there's more water available than the groundwater district says. If there's no outlet for developers to be able to acquire other rights, the groundwater districts aren't going to be able to sustain their rules. And I think we're seeing that happen in many places across the state already. For surface water, there's a host of legal issues about how this would work, and we can discuss some of those. I think, in general, it may be possible under Texas law to do this for forbearance in a local area or a small regional area. You don't lose your water right in Texas unless you have 10 years of continuous non-use. Even then, you really don't lose your water right. There's not a lot of enforcement of the cancellation provision by TCEQ. So I think we could probably make forbearance work. I'm actually on the board of the Trans-Pecos Water Trust, and we're working out in far west Texas, and we've done some leases now with farmers. We did one-on-one negotiations with farmers leasing their water at $10 an acre foot per year, and then we went to TCEQ and added in-stream use to that, and there are wet water rights. And the trust is just about to conclude a deal with a small irrigation district out there for a fairly major quantity of water that will be converted to in-stream use. So it's possible to do. I think we want to consider it in areas where we need, where we know what our in-stream flow targets are. And the Senate Bill 3 process that Susan spoke of is beginning to develop those in-stream flow targets, as is what's called the Senate Bill 2 process. There's really no reason to just go out and apply this willy-nilly unless you know a segment's going dry and it needs some water during drought years in the summer, and the only way to get that is through irrigation or other kinds of forbearance. But really, I think we want to focus on places where we know what the in-stream flow needs are. One final thing to think about is whether in the future there might be a role for the Texas Water Trust in conducting reverse auctions. As you know, we've actually had a state water trust, maybe you don't know, but because it's kind of been a little secret, we've had a state water trust since 1997. It's housed at the Texas Water Development Board. I think it's probably not an overstatement, and I've said it before publicly, so I'll say it again, that that trust is pretty much moribund. It has no money in it, and the agency doesn't really have either a mandate or resources to make that trust work. But it is a great tool that we have already established in law, and maybe there's a way in coming sessions to give some money to the trust, some state funding, or find some federal funding for it to conduct some pilots with reverse auctions in places where we really need the flows. And again, this is a tool that's not only applicable to environmental flows, it might be used by cities or water suppliers who find it a cheaper way than building a new pipeline to import water from another basin. If they can acquire existing rights either on a dry year option basis or maybe even a more permanent basis. So I'll stop there, and I guess we'll ask our panelists to join us. Thank you very much.